Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 124.
This week on the podcast, what do Ban Ki-moon, Bernie Sanders, and Sting all have in common? They all went a climate marching this weekend.
And we finally figured out what it takes to make GOPers fund the government. War resolutions. Watch out, world.
In Obamacare news, despite GOP scaremongering, people can be trusted to pay for products they've purchased, just like it's always worked in the past. Hooray, capitalism.
The White House combat training and sniper rifles are not enough to stop one Texas man with an important message about the sci-fi apocalypse and a small serrated knife.
J.K. Rowling wins the day in an uber-expensive campaign against two obese Scottish lottery winners looking to buy a nation.
Shonda Rhimes takes on the New York Times TV critic over super unclever play on words.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yeah.
That's what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
And tweet us if you have a good climate change march story.
Yes.
Because we were trying to tweet about it. We obviously couldn't go because we live in California.
We went by
the New York march.
Your mom went in our stead.
That's right. My mom went in our stead. She walked around and told me a lot about it in great detail before proclaiming, but don't you want to report on the climate march on the podcast as if we might be reporting on her exact whereabouts?
Right. Whether she was on 82nd or
71st
Street.
She did run into Medea Benjamin and told her she was doing great work.
Oh, good.
So that was fun. Okay. She also told me that although they had been expecting 100,000 people, they're now saying like 300,000 people showed up.
Crap.
So it was huge. I mean, I just looking at my Facebook wall, and obviously I know a lot of people who go to these kinds of things, but people that I don't normally see reporting on protests were at this. So this was
could some of those 300,000 people just people who may have just been accidentally walking through
down
New York
the
at the time that I don't want to downplay it. I'm not trying to take anything away from it.
But. Unique area, though, because usually these things happen downtown, and this was sort of like it started on the Upper West Side.
Oh, weird.
And went down to Midtown. You know, I think it marched down to the UN, because it's happening ahead of the General Assembly on carbon emissions.
Right.
That's happening later this week.
It was happening
in
a ton of, 161 other countries were having
something similar. Of other countries. Well, it was organized by 350.org, which is sort of like a big organization.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the time, these marches are organized by random rinky-dink people. And that's why no one shows up. But 350.org,
there were
subway ads when I was in New York last week. There was a lot of...
People knew.
Yeah, there was a lot of information available about this. And there were a lot of celebrities that went. Leonardo DiCaprio was marching with some indigenous
people. Sure.
Which is, I guess, a thing that he could do. I don't know. Sting supposedly went. And also, there were, like, marching bands that went. A lot of labor groups, obviously.
Sure.
Cuomo and de Blasio marched. I was proud of Cuomo.
Good for him.
Zephyr Teachout was there, obviously.
Sure.
My mom met Howie Hawkins. She was marching with the Greens.
That's exciting.
Yeah, and Ban Ki-moon was there.
That's great.
Which he tweeted, I think, about it earlier. He was marching with Jane Goodall and Al Gore, like you would.
Okay.
Then also Bernie was there. Our good buddy Bernie Sanders.
Thank God.
And Chuck Schumer was there.
Oh, my.
A lot of... I mean, it was high profile enough and sort of, I think, universally agreed upon as a good thing enough to be, like, sort of a popular thing. And then also, de Blasio unveiled a plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the city by 80% by 2050. So that was a good gesture, I guess. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
So it sounds like... You know, for a long time in New York under first Giuliani and then Bloomberg, we'd been having issues where, like, these large protests would happen and the police would just, like, flip their shit.
Ugh.
And apparently the police were very calm.
Oh, great.
People weren't, you know, there was not a lot of agitation.
That's good.
It was just sort of like a good, happy march where people who had stood for hours waiting because there were a lot more people than anyone expected then marched later.
Because environmentalists can get out of hand sometimes.
I know. You never know with them. Some of the most aggressive of the activists.
They really are.
No, I think also, I mean, this is good because it's sort of like, it's a fairly mainstream issue.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, obviously, when you have that many people show up to an event, it isn't just like the, you know, the sort of like real like left. It wasn't just like a bunch of Green Party people who just sort of decided to do something crazy and like
that they're trying to encourage action on instead of something like, there were anti-war protests that were this big. Everyone was really angry at those because they didn't want to be at war. Like,
well, right. Yeah,
that
exactly.
wasn't, it was an issue that mostly, you know, it was mostly lefties that were there or whatever.
Right.
It wasn't like the far left. It was a fairly mainstream thing, position at the, you know, among the left, but like everyone was sort of already agitated and it's not, you know, I think that in most of those situations, a lot of it had to do with the police tactics that they were using, because when you start to get, when you trap people in a protest and they can't get out and then one agitator is agitating and suddenly it's sort of like, it ends up being dangerous for everyone and that would happen a lot. But, But this is different, I think, because it's something that, you know, it sort of pays to be, it pays to be optimistic, because otherwise you might as well just shrivel into a hole and die, because what are you going to do? I'm sad I miss it, though. I love a good protest.
I know, you really do.
LA has the worst protests. Yeah, we're the shittiest protesters out there.
We are.
No one likes crowds, so like that.
No one likes crowds.
Is a loss for everyone. Right. You're not close enough to end. Like, how are you going to get to the protests? Like, good luck finding the beginning of it.
Right. And you also don't want to, as much as you love going to a good protest, like, when you're in Los Angeles, anytime there's something like that going on, all you want to do is, like, curse it because you can't get to where you're going.
Yeah. Including to the thing that you're, including right.
To it. Right.
And also, there's not any good place. There's not, you can't walk past enough icons in one march in LA to, like, make it worth it.
Right, that's
you
true.
Either do the march in Hollywood and you march past Hollywood stuff, or you do it downtown and no one ever finds out because no one was going there in the first place.
No, nobody's ever going
downtown.
And
it's just sort
downtown.
Of like.
There's also nothing downtown to walk
to
past.
To walk, you walk past what, the LA City Hall? Like, ooh. Yeah. Good work. Yeah, like, no. It just doesn't, work as well.
No.
But in any case, so that's the good news.
Yeah.
And then this is partial good news, I think, because we passed a bill.
We're funding the government.
We can celebrate the passage of a bill in Congress.
There was fear of a government shutdown as soon as everybody came back, because they were going to have to pass like a bill to fund it, like that was going to like kick in, I think, like in October or something.
Yeah.
So it was one of the first things that they were going to have to do when they got back from recess, and there was some rumblings from the usual suspects that maybe they weren't going to do it, but they got around to it this time because they tucked a war with Syria bill in there. So, of course, everybody was on board with voting to fund the government.
Yeah, like, they were like, if we have to do that to get a war underway, then let's go for it.
Yeah.
We're not trying to fool around with that.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't want to spend our money on keeping government open, but we will spend it on war.
Right. And it's a short-term. It was an easy sell, too, because it's only till December. So we're going to have to deal with this again in September, unless we just want to give more money to Syria at that point.
Twice that they're going to have to do this in the lame duck session.
Yeah.
That's a mess. People are just going to be holding their ground for dumb reasons, like they like to in lame duck sessions. It's a disaster.
Yeah.
An interesting coalition came together against these bills, though.
Yeah.
People that would normally vote for funding the government voted against it in certain instances because they didn't want to go on the record as voting for the war, like a lot of liberal Democrats.
Right.
But almost an equal number of Democrats in the Senate, almost an equal number of Democrats and Republicans voted against it.
Right.
Which is an unusual scenario.
Only 22 of them voted against it anyway.
It was heavy hitter names. I mean, it was Liz Warren. It was Kirsten Gillibrand.
Right.
Bernie Sanders.
Ted Cruz, Rand Paul.
Yeah, like...
Well, and this
there were a bunch of conservative Democrats that voted against it. Joe Manchin voted against it. John Tester voted... Like, there was three conservative Democrats that voted against it for other reasons that just had to do with their desire to not fund war, but also not fund the government, as far as I can tell. They were sort of on board for both of those things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a coalition that you and I have been talking about, that it's odd hasn't formed already. I didn't necessarily think it would be about whether we were going to fund a war in Syria or not, but I mean, I would have thought that it was probably going to be over economic issues or something like that. But I mean, like, it's not, it's interesting, this group of people, because this is a group of people that, like, in theory, if they could all get their egos out of the way,
could find some common ground,
could be able to work with each other.
Yeah.
We've seen it a little bit with like Gillibrand and Cruz and Rand Paul, like on some of those, what was she working on with in the military, the sexual assault. Thank you. Yes.
We got there eventually.
Thank you. My brain is not working so much today. I'm suffering from some sort of plague. You've already heard me cough. I realized that I was coughing and I tried to stop myself, but there was just I couldn't do it.
We're
both drinking throat coat
Brent's
tea
got a
right
death
now.
Illness.
I do. Yeah,
I'm trying to avoid getting it. I don't know that
it's gone to my brain.
He's got a brain illness too.
Yeah. So sorry about that.
You'll be happy to know, though, John McCain and Lindsey Graham are on board because they
obviously
love a good war. Yeah. Lindsey Graham, though, wants you to know that he knows that we don't really know what we're doing with funding these Syrian rebels.
Right.
And he doesn't really care.
No.
He said, to my colleagues who worry about the people we trained with the arms falling into wrong hands, I would say there's nothing we can do in this area without some risk.
Nope.
Sorry, guys. It's going to be risky. You can't know.
You can't know.
I'm still for it, but you can't know.
Yeah. Well, for once, Lindsey Graham has his finger on the pulse of America.
That's right.
Because that's what America thinks, too.
Oddly.
Because there was some polling this week.
Some suspect polling.
Classic America, I think.
Yeah, sort of. Exactly.
This is a classically American poll. where 66% of Americans support the decision to conduct airstrikes airstrikes against ISIS or ISIL right. or whatever it is that we're calling them these days.
Let's call them on this podcast. Let's call them ISIS.
ISIS. That's what we started.
That's what we started with.
We can't just change with no explanation.
No,
I don't like that.
No, and I don't want to have to call them both ISIS and ISIL at the same time
let's decide now.
ISIS. It's over.
That's it. Okay, so only 19% are opposed to it. 70% of Democrats, 75% of Republicans, and 59% of independents. Interesting that it's the independents who are sort of not as back.
Well, they're the Rand Pauly people, I feel like.
I guess, probably so, yeah. Anyway, but only 32% of that 66, so less than half, think that taking such actions against the ISIS,
against
call them the ISIS? The ISIS. No,
That's wrong. We know what's right and wrong. We don't know exactly what's right, actually, but we do know what's wrong.
Right. Against ISIS, well, they don't think that it's going to actually improve the situation in Iraq and Syria. They want to do it. They know it's not going to do anything, but they really just want to get out there and bomb some people. It's been a while since we've been we've had airstrikes.
Well, that's basically 25% of those respondents said it will make any difference, and 17% said it will make things worse, and then 26% said that they weren't sure. So a majority of people are certain that it's not going to make them better.
Right.
Only like a small minority of those. Of those people that were a majority in favor of doing this think it's going to help.
Right.
They don't have any positive feelings about it. No. They were just like, well, we should just do it. Why not?
Why not? You got to do something.
You got to do something. So let's bomb them. That always works out so well for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, that's us. We are.
Don't have the 66% of the country should not be on the same page as Lindsey Graham.
No. No.
It's a terrifying thought.
That is a terrifying thought.
That's not what you want.
That's not what you want.
Especially when it comes to war, because he's always wrong about
war. He's not a sense maker, guys.
No.
He's not right about war ever.
No.
He hangs out with John McCain making crazy comments about how, you know, you can't know whether you're doing the right thing, but you got to do something bad anyway. Like,
right.
Like, if you don't know, then that's a good time to not do anything that would in any way make the situation worse.
Yeah, you wait till you do know.
Right. That's often what we're trying to do in the real world.
Yeah.
Lindsey Graham world, war is a more important priority than knowing.
Yeah.
It's a disaster.
Oh, boy.
Meanwhile, we have good Obamacare news.
Yeah.
Because it turns out people who purchased it are also paying for it.
Actually purchased it.
Which was a weird thing that the GOP was trying to...
Right. Well, if you'll remember, after... So first off, no one was going to sign up because everything was wrong with the website. No one, you know, zero people were going to want it. No one wanted
the government in their ovaries.
No one was interested.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was the first line of, you know, what was going to happen.
Turned out it was wrong.
Turned out that was wrong because 8 million people signed up for it.
Right.
But at that point, we didn't know how many people had actually paid for it. So then everyone just started making up numbers about how the Republicans were like, well, no one's paying for it. There weren't concrete numbers. People were making estimates.
Suddenly 60% of those people were going to pay for it.
Right.
No
the estimates were always between like 60 and 80%. Guess what, guys? 91%, actually. 7.3 million of the 8 million are paying for it.
This was such a weird discussion because I was like, if you went through the trouble of signing up for Obamacare, what skin off your back is it to pay for it? If you weren't going to pay for it, you weren't going to sign up for it.
Right. You were signing up for it because you wanted the health care that you knew that you were ultimately going to have to pay for. It's like you said. It's like, you know,
you don't sign up. It's like, this isn't a discussion we have with cable companies. You don't sign up for cable and then not pay for it.
Right.
You either sign up for cable and watch cable or you don't sign up for cable.
Right.
Like, there's no point at which you sign up and then don't pay for it and don't have cable and just went through the wasted effort of signing up for it.
No.
That's not a thing people are doing. That's crazy.
It's totally ridiculous.
The sort of implication of signing up for it is that you're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
Just because they don't immediately ask you to pay for it at that moment doesn't mean you don't understand that part of the contract is that you've signed up and then you're going to pay for it.
I know.
This just like this whole discussion has always blown my mind.
Yeah. No,
because
me too.
In what world were only 60% of people going to pay for it?
It doesn't make any sense.
That's the most insane thing I've ever heard.
Counters logic.
It counters. And for a while I was like, do they just mean that like 40% of people are going to be subsidized? Like, I have tried so hard to talk myself into understanding this discussion and I never have. That's not a discussion we have about other purchased goods. This is just a purchased good that you have the right to either sign up for or not sign up for.
Right.
If you don't sign up for it, you pay a penalty. If you do sign up for it, you pay for it.
That's it.
There's not an option where you don't pay. So you have to sign up. If you went through the effort of signing up, chances were you were going to pay for it.
That's it.
And who are these 9% of people who aren't paying for it?
I know, exactly. Like, what are they thinking? What
was their plan?
What sort of time waste were they on there just trying to... Because trust me, it wasn't that easy
to
sign up for.
No. You had to put your internet thinking cap on. Really get in there.
I saw my dad try and sign up for it. It was... disaster no. on so many levels.
I know, and this was after we had walked around telling everyone, oh, it's so easy. Like, that was a big selling point that we like to talk about a lot. Wasn't actually true. It was worth it, but it wasn't easy. But also, like, what 9% of the 8 million people went through the trouble of signing up for it, and then were like, nah, I don't think so.
They probably signed up for it and then just decided that it was too expensive. Yeah. Or decided that they would just rather pay the penalty and not have health insurance. They also could have become employed at that point, too. You know what I mean? Like, I would assume that you could... Some of those people are people who just, like, decided not to, you know...
Right, decided not to use it for other reasons.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Or to, well, you know, when those extensions came in to stay with the plan that they were on that didn't meet the qualifications or whatever they were up to. But in any case, this has always been a ridiculous discussion, and it turned out that we've proven now that it's ridiculous.
Yeah, good. I'm glad.
So we're done with that.
Now they don't have any argument.
No, I know. Like, where are they going to go from here? Because every time that they've come up with some ridiculous reason that we can't have Obamacare, it's turned out that everyone loves it and everyone's buying it, and it's just, like, a good thing.
Yeah. Well, and that's what we have always said. And we even said that, like, you know, everybody was talking about how the Republicans were going to bank on that sort of, you know, to take back the House and the Senate. And they may do it. And, well, they already have the House. They're not taking that back. To hold the House and take back the Senate. They may not need it because it looks like they might win it anyway. But I mean, like, you're not seeing people run for or against Obamacare right now.
No,
I mean,
it's sort of they knew that was going to be the case.
I would have thought so, but
I mean, they were pretending that they didn't know.
Right.
But they had to know.
Yeah.
You don't,
I just don't think you can't run on it anyway.
No.
Right?
And I also think
it's going to be terrible if they do take back the Senate and then pass a bunch of times to try and, you know, undo all of it.
Here's what I wish that they would do. That they won't do because they're terrible. But here's where I think they could do something that would get everyone riled up and make them look like heroes. They won't do it because it's not in the favor of corporations to do this. I wish that they would get on the issue of how it is actually quite expensive to pay for health insurance full stop, and that they need to bring those costs down. I feel like that is an area where there's room for that discussion. The Democrats don't want to touch it because they went through all this trouble to convince everyone it was a good idea.
Yeah.
Someone needs to talk about the fact that premiums are still too high.
Yeah.
They're not as high as they were. That's good improvement. But we need to talk about the fact that it's still too high. This is an opening, I feel like, for Republicans.
I feel like that seems like something that maybe they would want
to... I think that their strategy would be like, well, let's cut services then. It wouldn't be like, let's address the fact that insurance companies are making a ton of money.
Massive tort reform, so you would not be able to, you know, sue hospitals that killed you anymore.
Right, you wouldn't be able to do anything.
It would be like, it wouldn't be the things that you would want.
No.
But, I mean...
But that's an area I feel like there's an opening for them.
Yeah.
They won't take it because they're idiots, but what are you going to do? Meanwhile, we had a weird incident this week where some Texan guy... just, like, went charging into the White House and, like, got there.
Got there. Yeah.
Like, just
went in. The door was unlocked.
Climbed over a fence and then just, like, went running into the White House with a small serrated knife in his pocket. At first, everyone was like, he wasn't armed. And then they were like, he had a knife. But then it turned out it was, like, a folding knife. I feel like he might have not known. Like, it might have been just, like, a knife he was carrying because people in Texas, you don't know. They might be carrying knives. You don't know.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Omar Gonzalez.
It's amazing he didn't have a gun.
I know. Age 42. Apparently... told the Secret Service that he was concerned that the atmosphere was collapsing and needed to get the information to the president so that he could get the word out to everyone.
So he's totally sane.
So he's a very sane
person.
Totally sane.
Doing what sane people do.
Knife-carrying Texan who just wanted to casually inform...
Wearing a tin hat as he
the president
over the...
you know, there was a danger to the atmosphere.
Well, I mean, he's not wrong about that.
No. If the People's Climate March taught us anything, it's that there is a danger to the atmosphere. I don't know that the president needed to be alerted in such an emergency kind of fashion.
No.
Obama wasn't even there, so he didn't get the he didn't time it right.
No.
Obama and Sasha and Malia had just left for Camp David. Michelle had already left. No one was there to get the message, except for Secret Service agent Lee Smart, who has a great name. That's the name of a Secret Service agent.
Yeah.
That, you feel great about that.
Although, the problem is that now everybody is sort of, like, panicked about the Secret
Security.
Service. Because, you know, the Secret Service of late has, like, not had a great run of it. And, I mean, like, it seems like you're always hearing some story about how they fucked up, or they were sleeping with hookers in some town that they're in somebody...
In Columbia, is that the Columbia thing?
I mean, they've just sort of, like... They've had a string over the last probably like 6-8 years that just hasn't been like spectacular.
Remember in 2009, there were those two people that came to a gala at the White House that just somehow got through like layers and layers of security.
Yeah.
Like just came in a ball gown and a tuxedo and like went to the gala. Like, can anyone just be doing that? Apparently, all you have to do is climb over the fence and run.
Weren't they the ones who were going to be on the Real Houses of...
Yeah, it was, DC it was something. Yeah, I
it was
think
like
so.
Some Bravo tie-in because yeah. I remember this as someone who has to watch all these Bravo shows. But yeah,
yeah, it was that was a pretty like epic security fail. And then there was another guy who also attempted something similar this week, but I don't know if it was actually a copycat thing. Everyone was calling it a copycat thing, but it was like a guy who was just sort of like standing in front of the White House, and so the Secret Service finally was like, dude, you've got to leave. And then he went and just like sat in his car in front of the White House and like didn't leave, and everyone was like, copycat. And I was like, I really? Don't think so.
Did he try and jump the fence?
I don't know. I don't think so. He certainly didn't have an important message about the atmosphere, because he could have told them then.
Right.
Maybe they would have let him in.
Yeah.
You know? If you have an important message about the atmosphere, maybe that's a time to get to the president.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Democrats are having a mess of a time with the midterms already. And right. now there was this Politico article that came out this week about how everyone is mad at Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Right.
So now that's the newest controversy at the DNC, is that the head of the DNC is hated by all.
It's not what you want.
It's not what you want.
No.
Everyone, well, they're, and it's sort of like a typical story where they're like, oh, she's like catering to her own political needs instead of ours. And
I never felt like that she had those, though.
Well, I was going to say, what is she trying to do?
And she's not
she's
a person
doing nothing.
She's not a person who's going to be the president.
No.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Like, that's not.
She's a Democratic fundraiser. She sends me a lot of emails to that effect. So I know.
She's,
help. I know. I'm a little worried about her at the moment. I was saying to Brent, if it, like, remember when Gawker had that article that was like, has anyone seen Nancy Pelosi recently? Right. And it was just because she sent a string out, like, of really alarming.
Danger. Right. You know, like, emergency.
So Debbie Wasserman Schultz has been sending out a string of help emails.
Yeah,
and then some,
it.
And then she has other people forward them to you
and
also.
And it's weirdly spaced, too.
Yes,
it's like really spaced.
Lowercase, it's like a serial killer letter.
It
like
totally is.
Lowercase help, all with extra spaces in between the letters.
Yeah.
Like, what in the world?
I don't know.
Debbie.
Well,
Deb.
She's in a spot.
She needs it.
She needs help.
Yeah, apparently. Well, people are sort of claiming that she's, like, trying to get her own PAC money while she's soliciting these donations, which I've never, ever seen her do. Yes. I mean, I don't know everything, but
yeah.
I know a lot because she sends me a lot of emails.
Right.
And that she's been traveling to uncompetitive house districts and to fundraise for herself instead of, like, do the people's work of going to competitive races or
But, like, is she going to uncompetitive races where, like, there's people who sort of, like, are good, like, fundraising type people or something like that?
Because,
like,
a
lot of, like,
her job.
A liberal, you know, I mean, there are Democrats who are probably running in Democratic districts that
where
are probably,
just, like, a lot of money.
That are probably, yeah, exactly, wealthy and are probably sort of, like, big stars in the sense that,
yeah.
like, you can have a dinner with them and everybody
exactly.
comes out
that's,
and pays for a $1,500
plate of food. That's why the president always
comes to
LA.
California.
It's not
competitive.
It's not competitive. He comes to take our money.
It's checks.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And God, I mean, can you imagine if the DNC is getting mad because she's daring to visit all of these districts that, like, never get any attention from the DNC because they just want your money?
I know,
like,
right?
Like, that's not even acceptable to these people?
Seriously.
Jesus Christ. You never get to see these people in these non-competitive states unless they're asking for money.
Yeah.
Don't take the one thing that we have away from us.
Yeah.
Also, though, they're also trying to spread rumors that she's trying to get the DNC to cover the cost of her wardrobe, which is a classic thing they try to do to, like, tar and feather women.
Women, yeah, exactly.
Because she was like, no.
Right.
And I was like, who cares if she is? This is not that controversial. She's not going to runway shows. Like, she's buying pantsuits. I don't give a
shit. She's going to Ann Taylor.
Right,
I mean,
like everyone calm down. But yeah, I feel okay about that. It's part of her job
she
to dress that way.
She needs five pantsuits.
Yeah, that's...
The DNC can pony up, like, $500 for Debbie Wasserman Schultz wardrobe.
Yeah.
That's all she needs.
That's all she needs. There's nothing else that I can't even with those comments.
Yeah.
Those are always infuriating. The real issue, I think, is that the Obamas don't like her.
Which is interesting.
Because she's raised a lot of money for them.
Right. And she's always been a huge apologist for him. I mean, like, she's really...
I know.
She's a good go-to surrogate to sort of, like, defend something
Any
ridiculous that he's done.
Any idiot thing that he did.
Yeah.
And the Clintons really don't like her because she was a chair of the Clinton presidential campaign and reached out before the official loss to say to the Obamas, I'll support you if this falls apart.
Yeah.
So she's an enemy of the Clintons, who they think is maybe trying... They think Hillary might be trying to arrange her ousting.
Right.
The Obamas have tried to replace her because her and Obama don't really talk that much and they just don't really... I don't know why they don't like her. No one explained that effectively in the article. But they've been trying
to
replace her.
They haven't,
but,
like, talked, like, in years.
Yeah.
I mean, about anything meaningful.
They just
anyway.
Have, like... polite conversations. And then I think that it has... Here's what I think. She's made a few gaffes recently. Yes. Although I don't see them trying to replace Biden anymore. And like, he's a gaffe machine. He was a gaffe machine before they took him on. They love gaffers. Not the lighting people. Not the lighting people. No. She's a very effective fundraiser for them. So I don't, you know, she's doing what she's supposed to be doing. I think they need a scapegoat because they're about to lose the Senate. And
even though she doesn't really,
she has nothing to do with that. But I mean, I think they need to be like, we're going to replace the DNC leadership
when
that happens. And then it'll look like they're like doing something about it. So I think they're going to pin that on her. And other people have been saying that as well. I didn't come up with that all on my own. And then they're also trying to sort of cover up because she has been made a few gaffes, including when she compared Tea Partiers to wife beaters, which I thought was it's a fair depiction. It was certainly not unfair. No. It might not have been fair.
It was probably based.
It wasn't the opposite of fair. No, it was somewhere in
the
middle.
She had to have gotten there from something.
Yeah, it was a comment that could be made.
Exactly.
So,
oh boy, big international news this week. Yeah. Scotland voted no to break away from Britain.
But the vote was 55-45. It was a very close vote, and the voter turnout was massive.
Yeah.
So it's a topic of interest.
Yeah.
But it means that more than 1.6 million people voted to get rid of the British Empire, basically.
Yeah.
which is sort of interesting, because they're British people.
Yeah, right, exactly.
It also, I was talking to a friend of mine who's British about this, because I was like, listen, I watched the John Oliver piece just as much as everyone else. I still don't know what I think about this.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I think it's good that they stayed in the Union, because I think that's sort of economically a more stable choice. But he was like, I think it's great that they took this vote, because it makes David Cameron look like an asshole. And I was like, yeah. Because to be the guy, he's not liked. He was sort of the epitome of everything that's wrong with being in the British Empire. And John Oliver's made that clear. And he also just sort of like, it's going to change the way that everyone deals with Scotland, which I think is probably important to them. Because they weren't given the sort of same, you know, rights, you know, within the British Empire as parts of England. And I think they've been part of this thing for like 300 years. Like, they just didn't want to be ignored anymore. They just wanted to be loved. But I think it'll change the way that... Now they've been heard. Yeah. I think it will change the way that Britain deals with all of these sort of like pseudo-satellite members of the British Empire. Like Wales is another example.
Yeah.
And like Northern Ireland is sort of in
that. Well, that was like another thing that people were thinking, is that if this went, you know, the way of the yeses.
Yeah, then like, what do those other everything falls apart.
It could all fall apart, yeah.
And so, in any case, that was interesting. Also, what was really interesting about it, which was something we learned from the John Oliver piece, because he devoted half of last week's episode to this, is that this was basically a campaign that was funded on one side by J.K. Rowling, and on the other side, she was the nose, and then on the other side by a Scottish lottery winning couple.
I love that.
Who funded the yeses. Like...
Yeah.
It was just like J.K. Rowling versus some lottery winners.
Right.
And then all of Scotland got a say.
Yeah. Well, and it really all sort of like came down to whether people thought, or what people, economically, sort of like what it came down to. Because
they were going to have to go off the pound,
I think. Right, there were a lot of issues with currency, because sort of like, you know, they're on the pound right now, like what would they have gone on?
Yeah. I understand that argument to some degree, but I also feel like, a lot of countries use the American dollar as their official currency, and that's like a thing that's happening that everyone accepts is happening, and we've all moved on with our lives. You can use the dollar as legal tender in tons of countries that are not, you know, that are independent countries that we don't.
But is that because we have allowed that, though, or
no? How are you going to stop someone from accepting your currency?
Yeah, I guess.
We control the financial mechanisms that govern it, so like we can.
Right.
Raise interest rates and do all, you know, we can do all of the things that you do to control a currency.
Yeah.
So if we decided that we wanted to devalue it, we could just do it without their input. And that is why you don't want to be on some other country's currency, I think,
right.
is because they can do anything. You know, imagine if you were on the, you know, the Brazilian currency before they went to their most recent currency and it was being devalued every single day.
Yeah.
And like, you don't even have the ability to address that problem
because
you're just like stuck in some random country using any old currency.
Yeah.
But I think that it's more about a control thing than it is about... Because, like, what, are they going to stop people from... if I decided I was taking pounds today, like, I could accept payment in pounds if I wanted to.
Yeah,
and if you decided, as someone I was paying for services, that you would accept the pounds that I had gotten from... Like, we could just all be on pounds tomorrow if we decided to be.
Yeah.
Like, what are they going to do in Britain to stop us? They're going to tell
enough.
Us we can't?
Like, yeah.
They can't do that. So... I don't know. But in any case, it was an interesting and exciting thing that almost nobody in America had an opinion on.
Right.
Because everyone wanted to have an opinion.
Yeah.
Because it's good. It feels good to have an opinion, you know?
Always.
Yeah. This was just sort of complicated.
Yeah, it was. Oh, man. Ebola. Again, with Ebola.
People still have it.
God.
It's still out there.
I hope that's not what I have.
No, I know. If you have Ebola, I'm going to be really pissed because I invited you to my home.
I know. And we're not supposed to. We've been telling everybody for weeks that we should not be alarmed here in America because we're not going to be getting Ebola here.
Exactly.
Anyway, it's still not great, as you may imagine. No. They haven't gotten anything under control. And right now in Sierra Leone, they are trying to get it under control in a very sort of drastic measure because they've literally put the country on lockdown.
Just like full on.
Don't leave the house.
Yeah. And then they're going door to door and marking Ebola doors with
literally,
chalk.
There are 6 million people in this country, and they have like 30,000 either like doctors or aid workers or whatever who are like, yeah, that's what they're doing.
They're chalk marking doorways.
Chalk marking doorways. And they're like basically getting anybody who is sick out of there. They're also like sending, I think some of these, they're not all doctors. So I think like some of them are like, they said are teachers. Like they also, you know, a big part of this has just been sort of like general uneducation about like how it spreads and like what you should be doing to like stay safe from it and things like that. So they're also just trying to sort of like educate people at the same time as they're trying to decide whether these people are sick or not. But like, I mean, you see pictures and it's literally just like ghost towns. Like people seem to be abiding by it. There was some sort of drama leading into it as to whether, you know, I mean, people were not happy about it, obviously, because who wants to have to stay in their house and get checked to see whether they have Ebola? Like, that doesn't sound exciting to anybody. So, anyway, the newspaper in the country, which is hilariously called the Awareness Times, by the way, wrote, like, a big op-ed about it, and they were like, they called the preparation, they said it was, like, chaotic, they said that it shouldn't start, so, like, people were sort of, like, getting all up in arms before it, but the government was sort of like, no, we're doing this, and so they're doing it. Supposedly they're going to finish today.
Oh, good.
I think it started earlier in the week. They said that they were going to try and have it done by Sunday.
Was everyone literally just in their house for the last week?
I guess. I don't. I mean,
God.
I don't know. Ugh. I think so.
Okay. Boring.
I mean, maybe
what if
they
you
could
live alone.
I was going
to
say,
spend the last week
they go
by
to
yourself.
Store? Do they?
Yeah, like where
did
they get food? Like what?
I mean, I saw a bunch of pictures, and it didn't look like anybody was
out and about.
Out and about, except for people walking around in hazmat suits.
God, that's some creepy.
Right? I know. Shit. It was.
That is creepy.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the St. Louis police are continuing in their efforts to address this Ferguson situation in the worst possible manner.
Oh, God. This is just the best. Because, so, you know, they had a lot of media relations issues on top of, you know, killing innocent people.
We now
issues.
Understand
they had a lot of issues. But, yeah, we understand why now. But they're offering a way for their police officers to learn about how to not have this happen the next time. Because
they're giving them media training classes.
Yes, because they have a fun and entertaining class that they're offering to people to, you know, deal with this. It's to deal with an officer-involved shooting.
Yeah.
And it's called You Can Win with the Media.
Oh, God.
Boy. It's described, it says, in addition to the Ferguson case study, this fast-paced class is jam-packed with the essential strategies and tactics, skills and techniques that will help you win with the media.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Yeah, and they...
This is not helping.
There's sections in it called Meet the 900-Pound Gorilla and Feeding the Animals.
Like, no.
God.
Don't have sections called that.
Don't have any of this happening.
No.
Don't... First of all, you can't win with the media when you shoot an innocent person. There's not a way to win with the media.
That's what we need to be talking
about.
That's
the media strategy they could have gone with that would have worked. 100% success rate.
That's right.
When you don't shoot an innocent person, you don't have a media problem.
You don't. No, they're not even there.
No,
they don't care about what you're doing.
No, exactly.
All you're doing is stopping people for traffic violations.
Right.
You're fine.
Yeah. If you're helping old ladies get cats out of their trees, the media might even report a positive story about you.
That's
a good media relations
story. You've done a good
deed. Yeah.
You've helped the people.
Exactly. This is not, like, officer-involved shooting You Can Win with the Media is not the name of a class you want to have.
No.
That's...
Yikes.
So they're continuing in their efforts to not in any way address the problem that they've caused.
Yeah.
Ooh,
follow up from last week.
Oh, my God.
Our lead story last week was the Palin family stretch Hummer limo brawl.
They finally have acknowledged it happened.
Right. Sarah Palin took to Facebook, of course, which is where all people are taking to things, where Mark Sanford's breaking up with his fiance.
Right.
It's where, I mean...
Facebook's a busy political space.
It's where you go to make bold statements.
Exactly.
Anyway. So Sarah Palin finally acknowledged it, and she said... She declared herself to be a proud mama of her daughter, the straight shooter, who she called one of the strongest young women you'll ever meet, which is, I think, proven by the fact that she
threw some right hooks.
Yeah, she punched a man a couple times in the face.
Right. So, and at first, we weren't supposed to believe that because there were conflicting reports of that. But I think now we can confirm that Bristol Palin was involved in a fist fight.
Yeah, she did that.
Yeah, she was a fight. She was fist fighting. So that is a real thing that happened.
Yeah. Thank God, too.
Another real thing that happened is that we have Grey's Anatomy news for you because there was a big Shonda Rhimes controversy in the news this week.
This is actual news. This is actual not just news. You and this I not, riffing right. on
Grey's Anatomy's not on yet.
No.
Is it coming? What, is it coming back soon?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe. I don't know. Nobody knows.
Soon. It'll be back. It's always around.
Yeah. It's the trailer for it looks very ominous though for Derek and Meredith.
Really?
Yes.
I haven't seen a trailer.
Quite a time of it.
Oh God. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm probably not going to watch the trailer either. I might not even watch the episode. I don't know what I'm going
to
do.
Yeah, it's hard to know.
It's hard to know.
But anyway, as you know, Shonda Rhimes is sort of like
the
ruling
queen of television.
She's the queen of television. And so there was an article in the New York Times by their TV critic Alessandra Stanley,
Who's always getting in trouble for dumb shit.
Right. Anyway, so if you don't know, Shonda Rhimes has her production company, Shondaland. Now has all of the shows on Thursday night. She has three dramas on Thursday night. It's the first time that one person has sort of like been in charge of an evening on television. So it's Grey's, Scandal, and this new show that she has called How to Get Away with Murder.
Right.
Anyway, so Alessandra Stanley started the story about Shonda Rhimes by saying, quote, when Shonda Rhimes writes her autobiography, it should be called How to Get Away with Being an Angry Black Woman, which was a very, very clumsy riff on How to Get Away with Murder. Clumsy is not even the word, I don't think. I mean,
it was a clumsy riff,
but it was also just like
a bad one.
Yeah. Yes.
And it drew a lot of ire, including ire from Shonda herself, as it would.
Right. Well, and because she said, you know, ultimately the article and, you know, this is what Alessandra Stanley said too, was fairly complimentary of her.
Right.
And just in terms of like putting, you know, people like this and oftentimes like having, you know, strong black women on television. You know, they're on Grey's Anatomy, obviously Kerry Washington and I think who is Viola Davis, who's the star of How to Get Away with Murder. So, but it was just sort of like worded in a way that's just sort of like made it sound bad, obviously. Yeah. And so Shonda was like, she tweeted, she goes, wait, I'm angry and a romance writer. I'm going to need to put down the internet and go dance this one out because ish is getting real. Yeah. But then she also, and this I think is what made the statement by the critic even more ridiculous, is because Shondaland is doing How to Get Away with Murder, but that is, she did not
She's
create.
She's just producing it.
She didn't create that show. So she also tweeted at the creator, whose name's Pete Nowak, or Novak, maybe? I don't know.
It's a terrible name to have.
Yeah, exactly. But she tweeted at him, and she said, confused why NY Times critic doesn't know the identity of creator of a show that she's reviewing. Did you know, or then she said, at Pete Noah, did you know you were an angry black woman? Because he is neither of those things.
No,
he's a white man. Yeah. So, also, clumsy in just that factually she
factually
was
incorrect.
Not doing it right.
No, yeah. Well, and also, I think part of it was that it sort of like devalues what's so cool about the character she does create. I was talking about this with someone at work the other day, and because I always say this about Grey's Anatomy, because as dumb as it's gotten, the thing that I always thought was so cool about it was the first show with like a truly diverse cast where the diversity wasn't the point. There were characters that were African-American, there were characters that were white, there were characters that were Asian, and they were just sort of like characters that were doing things, and you weren't like, that's a black person on television, look at them. They had, you know, there were African-American people in positions of authority, and it wasn't a big deal.
The chief of surgery was African-American.
Like, all that was so different at that time. That was the first show that I can remember that really did that as naturally as it did it, and that's the same thing with Scandal. You know, Scandal is not a show about a black woman doing things that only black people can identify. It's just a show about a woman that we can all relate with, and her being black is not the point.
Right.
And it's just sort of part of the character. It's not.
Well, that's the same with. I'm assuming how you get away with her.
Exactly.
I mean, like, she's a law professor, I think. Like,
right.
It's not as if she's not.
Shonda Rhimes is really the first person who has created sort of characters for African American actors that have been sort of like for everybody in a way that the network has supported that. Like, you know, in the way where ABC never, none of these shows are sort of like advertised as shows for African American audiences, like so many shows with black cast that you see. Yeah. And that's because they're not. They're for all.
Yeah, they're broad shows.
She's a person who just dared to put black people in a show for everyone, and no one said anything because she did it so well. And like, why does no one talk about that about her? Like, she's not an angry black woman. She's the first person who has transcended that dumb sort of like, you know, stereotype.
Angry blackness anyway. Yeah,
I mean, she's not the first person who's transcended that, but she's the first person who the network has allowed to sort of like create something that universal.
I just think of like all of the great, you know, African-American characters that have been on that show, and I just don't think of any of them as being stereotypically angry. Sort of like the angry black person. You know what I mean? Like, whatever that means anyway. I mean, that's just a terrible thing. Like, that's, I mean, I feel like to use that term, it's just like a
you should know
anyway,
that
but
it's
I mean,
not,
like, that's not what
that's
you
not
say.
What you say.
But I mean,
you should know that's sort of not an appropriate sentiment, but it's especially inappropriate for Shonda Rhimes, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because she's really created such universal shows that she's managed to take, you know, African-American women who are like the most sort of like denigrated people on television most of the time and give them roles that are great because everyone can sort of see past it.
Yeah.
You know, that's so unusual on television even now. And it was definitely unusual on television 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And like, that's just sort of like a bad way of putting it because of that too.
Yeah. Ugh, idiot.
Everyone just walking around saying shit.
Well said.
Yes, I'm famous for my really ingenious commentary. Mm-hmm. But so that's sort of the news this week.
That was
not much happened.
Short podcast. Sure.
Well, we recorded on Monday last time.
Right, we knew too.
Yeah, we knew.
Were like it's
low on news this week.
Might be like this week.
Yeah.
So
sorry about it.
Enjoy it.
Yeah. Use the extra 20 minutes to go do something.
Yeah.
Fun.
I was probably going to have a coughing fit at some point in the next 20 minutes anyway. So
yeah, no. So
it's
we avoided
good. We
that.
Made it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.